I want to actually start this episode with a verbal game, question mark.
Oh, look at us, like, just really mixing shit up.
And it's only one question, but I overheard my neighbor.
Really overselling it as a game. Okay,
stop. It could spiral out, but.
okay.
I overheard a verbal game happening in my apartment complex when I was outside recently. I love to eavesdrop. It was, you know, I was taking a little break and my downstairs neighbor had a couple friends over, sounded like, and they were sitting out on their balcony. And
I'm here to drop the ease, you know, hey.
It was a really entertaining hour. And I kind of felt bad for the guy who was attempting to lead the verbal game because, like, nobody was really here for it. But, like, I was up on my own balcony, like, answering the questions. And I was like, if only we were hanging out, you and I.
You and I destined to be friends.
I guess more compatible than he is with his friends. But anyway.
Apparently.
I wanted to ask you the question that he asked them. And it's.
And that they so rudely wouldn't answer. Go on.
Well, it's not an either or. And I think they just, like, weren't here for, like, being creative with their answer at all. So I'll pose it here.
Well, I'm ready to show them.
Please, please show my neighbors who is interesting. Okay. But his question was, how would you manage this superpower? Like, how would you use it if you had super strength? But you only had it for 1 minute at a time. And the 1 minute was exclusively, he said, after you nut.
Oh, wow.
This was so fun to overhear.
I love him. Okay. Also, you know that this was his game and not ours, because I don't think either one of us would ever use the expression after you nut, but no. That's neither here nor there. Wow. Well, as a man,
there's more of a refractory period.
Greater ease into how you could masturbate and use this at will than there is for a woman. Or I should say a person with a vagina. If you have a penis, I just feel like it's like peeing in an alley. You have a little bit, like, greater accessibility to whenever, wherever. But I
pop
make
into
it
a
happen.
Phone
I feel
booth
like, if
like
I
Clark
to.
Kent.
Yeah, I feel like I could, like, you know, get off in a scenario in which I needed super strength.
That'd be a lot of pressure, but maybe.
I feel like I'd have to be alone. Like, I'd have to be fulfilling my own needs, not someone being like, quick, lift this car off my child. And I'd be like, hold on, let me finger bang myself real quick.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know that I would be able to do that. That, again, to your point, is like kind of a lot of pressure. Wow, this is.
But I think you'd probably get a lot done at home. Like,
yeah.
You get use your minutes here and there as wisely as possible. I don't know, lift the couch, vacuum underneath it.
I was going to say, like, I would probably really just need this to clean under my couch. It's like the one thing that I can't really do easily by myself. It's very low to the ground.
Install a washer dryer.
Yeah, I mean, well, I honestly feel like I would probably use it for cleaning purposes.
Mostly, yeah.
And just to, like, move, if I needed to move furniture really quickly. I feel like I can imagine
lots
myself,
of rearranging,
like,
would happen.
Like masturbating, rapidly moving all the furniture out of one room, and then, like, really deep cleaning that room, and then masturbating again to then again in 1 minute move all the furniture back into that room. Like, that's what I feel like I would be doing.
Oh, you'd have to do it incrementally, though, because it would take more than a minute to move all the furniture, even if you're super strong.
Oh, if you have super strength.
I guess it would take, like, as long as, like, carrying groceries into the next room, probably.
If you have super strength, it would be, like, yeah, it would be the same as, like, picking up your phone and moving it to another room.
Something that weighs nothing. Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah. I'd be like, let me just lift this dresser real quick out of here.
I would probably also make,
in a minute,
like,
is longer
videos
than you think
of
it.
It is longer than you think. I would make, like, 30, 45-second videos displaying my super strength and get rich off of being internet famous for that.
Oh, wow. How benevolent of you. Well, it's not a bad idea.
This is a tough one to use for other people. Like, it's really
Yeah, I don't
it's
think
hard
you can
to
help
appropriately
people with
help others with this.
That's why I would be skeptical of the YouTube bit, because people would want you to help them and then you'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I can only do that for a minute after I pull a nut. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I don't love it. Yeah, I don't love that. I feel like I wouldn't, this wouldn't be something I would share with people. I think I would just use it for my own personal secret cleaning.
I think that I would want to keep it a secret as well, and that might be my intention, but I might think that it's like so cool that it would be hard not to share with anyone.
I mean, I like maybe like close, like personal, like deep friends and or the person that you're having sexual encounters with, but like,
I mean, you could lie and say that it's brought on by something else that's like something you would do a lot. Like you could say like every time I poop, I get a minute.
Is that better? Like, that's
no,
like
because
even
then
weirder.
Friends are
if
like
you
trying
be
to feed you
on
laxatives.
By the news, I would rather them talk about my orgasms than my shits.
100%.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just would like to be thought as someone having an orgasm rather than someone taking a shit.
Perpetually
like in other
someone taking
minds.
A shit. Yeah.
Yeah. If I want people to imagine me at home, I don't want them to imagine like pooping, you know?
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
You made that up. Listen.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Yes. Good night.
We would take Jamie's grandma's underwear, run them underwater, put them all in the freezer.
All of them, though. So there were none.
Literally every pair.
Ooh, quick pause for a thermometer read. Do you believe in hypnosis?
Like ethically?
Lisa Frank went to high school with the Romneys. And then I'm going to have the second mouth on my back.
That needs feeding.
Needs feeding.
Welcome. Ugh, Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect not our poops, but maybe our orgasms and perhaps a little superhuman strength, who's to say? But also psychology, pseudoscience, pop
eavesdropping.
Culture, eavesdropping, whatever we're noodling on at the time about how we can show your neighbors. Okay, in order to determine why people are the way that they are, that is Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams in Chicago.
Oh, hey. Wow, I also never want to hear an orgasm referred to
yeah.
as like nutting. Like yeah. that's just so I mean
it
I
was almost my favorite part of this anecdote. Like I think that if he had used another word,
like nutting,
I might not have. Well, it like struck me as so funny because I like haven't heard anyone say that in so long, or like it's so
yeah, sure.
infrequent or comical. That it really stuck out to me and made me remember. So I feel like if he had chosen a different word, we may not have talked about this.
Okay, here's a question for you, though. Like, what other phrases, like, would you put, like, nutting in the same kind of, like, tier with? Like, to me, it would be, like, somebody being like, I gotta go to the John. That would be like
in
the
crapper
person.
Maybe
yeah the crapper, or if somebody said they had to hit the head, like
know what that means.
It's like a ship term for like going to the bathroom, but like when people who have never been on boats say it, I have questions.
Maybe your favorite pinch a loaf.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah, somebody who says nutting would refer to shitting as pinching a loaf. That's so gross. I hate everything. That's the nastiest like euphemism I've ever heard for pooping.
It's way too descriptive.
I just like it's the use of the word
maybe
pinch.
Prairie dog.
Oh, stop. Gross. I feel like I haven't heard that expression since like grade
a couple
school.
Weeks ago when we talked about it off air.
Oh, did we? Were we talking about it in the context
we
of
we were
like, grade
and you were
school?
Talking about okay. how much you hated the phrase.
Yeah, okay. Whew. It's deeply unsettling. I don't want to hear these terms.
Do you remember?
Give me some. This is the last thing. Euphemisms for orgasm. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Would you remember in eighth grade when we had to read that book by Thomas Paine, and we had a long-term substitute teacher who was a classmate's grandmother, describe the book
not great.
As a crapper book?
Yes.
I can't remember what the book was, but it was like a founding Thomas fathers.
Paine. No, this is it's not like a book. It's the something papers. Hold on, it's gonna come to me. Thomas.
It's Paine. A little book.
He wrote Common Sense. Wasn't that was what it.
That was it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, listen, it was all, I feel like, about, it was just really about, like, no taxation without representation vibes.
That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, it was to the British, and she called it a crapper book because it was, like, short. It was, like a novel. It was, like, a thing, and she just meant, like, it was so short you could read it in the bathroom.
In one
and
shit
never been
or a couple of shits.
More disgusted in an educational setting in my life, and I was in eighth grade. So.
She used to sneak into the bathroom and smoke in between bells, which I always
appreciated. What?
Yeah, when you didn't go to our high school, like, you went to a different high school than me, but, like, I was
so
in the same.
Questions.
I stayed in the same district for middle school and high school, and this woman continued to be a substitute teacher, like, throughout my high school experience. And she would always smoke in the like women's bathroom by like the wood shop in the art room, like every day in between
felt like
bells.
She could blame it on students.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just step outside?
I don't think there was anywhere because you have 4 minutes between bells. I don't think she had time to like run to her car, get off of campus, and then like come back.
Wow. Don't smoke, kids. It's hard to quit and it's hard to fit into your substitution schedule.
Okay? It is.
Like, that's what I'll say. This has been a friendly PSA about not smoking. Honestly, smoking seems pretty inconvenient to me.
It's super inconvenient. California is just kind of slowly forcing me to quit, which is both irritating
it's
and
for
cool.
the best.
Yeah.
It's why we had to get you out of Kentucky, land of indoor smoking.
It was like way too easy to smoke all the time in Kentucky. Yeah.
Yeah. We had to send you back to the West Coast. It's like your rehabilitation program.
I know. Everyone like looks at you like you're disgusting. And I like only do it at night, like once a week now, like out
when you're
in the
like
street
in the,
alone.
Under the cover of darkness. So you can't be shamed.
There's like a citywide ordinance. Like we can't do it like in or anywhere around our apartment complex. Like, so it's, you know, it's a lot of rules.
A lot of rules. Okay.
But we're not here to talk about smoking ordinances or how high the curbs are here and it's fucking up the doors on my car. Not that.
Oh, okay. All right. Not here to talk about it.
Mm-mm.
We are here to talk about a topic that you don't know what it is yet.
I know. I've been patiently waiting.
Patiently waiting. And before I fully introduce the topic, I'd like to talk briefly about Edward Snowden. Why not?
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So Edward Snowden, you probably have heard this name before. If you haven't, I'm going to give you a brief synopsis. If you need your pop culture reference, he was played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the movie Snowden. Okay. So in 2013, Snowden was hired by an NSA contractor after previous employment with Dell and the CIA. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Snowden says he gradually became disillusioned with the programs with which he was involved and that he tried to raise his ethical concerns through internal channels, but was ignored. So he's trying to holler at people at the NSA, being like, some of this shit's fucked up. And everybody's mm-hmm. like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So on May 20th, 2013, Snowden flew to Hong Kong after leaving his job at this NSA facility in Hawaii. And in early June, he revealed thousands of classified NSA documents mm-hmm. to several journalists.
Mm-hmm.
He became, or, you know, kind of came into international attention after stories on the material appeared in The Guardian and The Washington Post and plenty of other publications,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, fast forward towards the end of the month, right? June 21st, 2013. The U.S. Department of Justice, her sweet DOJ, unsealed charges against Snowden of 2 counts of violating the Espionage Act of 1917 and theft of government property, following which the Department of State revoked his passport.
Mm.
2 days later, Snowden flew into Moscow's airport, right? Where Russian authorities observed that his passport was canceled, mm-hmm. as one would when mm-hmm. you go through customs. Yes. And he was restricted to the airport terminal for over a month.
Whoa. I did not know that.
Couldn't come into the country, but like couldn't get on another flight.
Isn't there a movie like this with Tom Hanks called The Terminal?
I don't know anything about that, but I believe you.
Cool. Yeah. Go on.
Okay. So Russia later granted Snowden the right of asylum with an initial visa for residence for 1 year,
okay.
which was subsequently repeatedly extended. In October of this year, Anis of our Hell Lord 2020.
Yes.
The year of the Satan. Okay. he was granted permanent residency in Russia. So 7 years later, more than, mm-hmm. So just a few, I mean, weeks ago, really.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
At the time of this recording. So a subject of controversy, no shit. Snowden has been called a lot of things, including traitor, hero, descendant, patriot, and whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
More on that later. So U.S. officials condemned his actions as having done grave damage to the U.S. intelligence capabilities, and Snowden has defended his leaks as an effort to inform the public as to that which is done in their name and which is done against them. His disclosures have fueled debates over mass surveillance, government secrecy, and the balance between national security and information privacy. A lot of hot topics, one might say.
Mm-hmm.
But the word I really want to circle up in on here is whistleblower.
Mm-hmm. And that's like right? how I'm, I think that's what I associate with him the most as a term.
So glad I chose him as an example then, because today we're talking about whistleblowing.
Great.
Whistleblowers. Okay. And it's what you associate with him. So we love to see it. So let's, before I like tell you what a whistleblower is and like a little bit of shkibbity bop on
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
What are your like associations aside from Edward Snowden with the term whistleblower? Is this like a positive word to you? Is this like a negative word to you? Do you remember the first time you heard it or like what you associate it with other than Edward Snowden?
I think the first time I heard it was during Enron stuff.
Okay, that seems appropriate for our generation, yeah.
Yeah, and I was very young and I didn't like totally understand what was going on, but like I was the mm-hmm. only child in a family of adults who like cared a lot about stocks, etc., and had Enron stock, and so like I heard like okay. my grandpa and my uncle like talking about it, and I think that like that's the first time I had heard that term, and I don't know if I like, I think I just thought of it as, like, a tattletale, like, then, because sure. I was, like, in elementary school, and I'm like, cool, yeah. so this is, like, a person who, like, snitched on everyone, and, like, now this is falling mm-hmm. apart. But right. as an adult, and through, like, Me Too stuff, and just, like, generally, I think society trying to hold people more accountable, it definitely, mm-hmm. in my mind as an adult, I think has shifted away from like snitching or like someone who might be like annoying to like probably a very brave person, because I think that there's often like a lot of consequences for people who call things out that like go against the system or like challenge things that are not ethical. I think that like we hear a lot of like positive stories about whistleblowers, or like we like applaud them in public, but I think that they probably have very difficult lives. Like I think a lot of them maybe who are less public like can become like even like hunted people. Like if you're a whistleblower for like a major embezzlement that's happening, mm-hmm. that might not go so well for you if people don't get convicted, you know? So I think it can be like an important but dangerous position for people to put themselves in.
I think there's a lot of merit to everything you've said. And I think a lot of maybe my early versions of whistleblowing, to your point, are kind of like the Enron kind of version of things, mm-hmm. where it seemed very much like about companies and kind of corporate America.
And documents.
Rather than the... And all those documents,
yeah.
all them docs. But I also I don't know that I saw the word when I was doing this research, like, really associated with this, but I think I kind of associated the concept of whistleblowing with Watergate.
Oh, I didn't, but yeah, go ahead.
I think I associated it with Watergate as, like, an early example, although I don't really think people, in, at least in things I've seen, like, throw the word whistleblower around with that so much. Mm-hmm. I don't know why in my head that's kind of where I go. But, yes, I think, like, Enron and, like, I feel like there was some big shit with, like, GE at one point in time. And that's kind of the whistleblowing that I feel like I spent the majority of, like, early life kind of familiar with.
Oh, yeah. And my grandpa had all that shit with GE and the whistleblowing on his warehouse. I forgot about that. So, yeah, that was another example, but I'm sorry.
Sure. And so to me, it was like a lot of corporate America, and you say, like, tattletale, snitches, and that, like, that's kind of what I thought about it. Like, it didn't seem like a super positive to be called, and it often seemed to, you know, again, to be caught up for me in my mind with, like, corporate America and money rather than things that I felt like personally affected me as someone who wasn't, like, throwing around a bunch of stocks, you know, in middle school and high school.
Correct. It felt like white collar crime that was, like, so far away from me I couldn't even really fathom it.
Totally. And,
like, it's a fraudulent spreadsheet.
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying about how us having kind of a more nuanced version of this and holding people accountable is definitely something I want to get into. And to wrap up just a little bit of talking about Snowden up top, on September 2nd, again, of the year of our Satan, 2020, a U.S. federal court ruled that the U.S. intelligence's mass surveillance program exposed by Edward Snowden was illegal and probably unconstitutional.
Probably? Okay.
Probably unconstitutional. Definitely illegal, maybe unconstitutional. And that happened, like, months ago, like, September of 2020. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in the media, at least, he really was portrayed as a villain in a lot of ways. And I think probably more came to light about him, and there were more people being like, yeah, but this, you know, surveillance is fucked up, and, like, maybe he did a good thing, and just people having different opinions, right? We heard some different voices, but I think initially people were like, this is a threat to national security.
Well,
like,
he went against shit. Exactly. Yeah. He went against, like, the bureaucracy of it. Like, he did, like, the wrong thing on paper, but it was to preserve, like, some idea of ethics, or it was, like, acting out of morality, even though it was, like, technically against the rules.
And some people would probably argue about his motivations with you, but...
And I'm here to hear that, but I think that it's good that some of these things came to light.
For sure. So let's break down just, like, whistleblowing in general and get a little backstory, maybe even on the term. So a whistleblower, oftentimes now written as, like, one word, we've used it so much, but used to be two words, then some people hyphenated it, and now it's just, like, a term, you know.
Soon it'll but be WB
Warner Brothers whistleblow. Okay. So a whistleblower is a person, usually an employee, who exposes information or activity within a private, public, or government organization that is deemed illegal, illicit, unsafe, or a waste, fraud, or abuse of taxpayer funds. So Snowden stuff, certainly, like, him calling out, like, hey, these people are, you know, paid by you doing stuff that they're not telling you about, which I think is a critical thing and what we should all be thinking about. Okay, so those who become whistleblowers can choose to bring information or allegations to the surface either internally or externally. Snowden's story depicts him bringing things up at the NSA internally first and feeling dismissed, and then bringing it to light outside of the organization. So, over 83% of whistleblowers report internally to a supervisor, human resources, compliance, or a neutral third party within the company, with the thought that the company will address and correct the issues. Externally, a whistleblower can bring allegations to light by contracting a third party outside of the organization, such as the media, the government, or law enforcement. Even though it is illegal in many countries, including the United States, over 90% of whistleblowers report being retaliated against from those who are accused or alleged of wrongdoing on behalf of the company.
As I said, it could be dangerous.
Snowden having his passport revoked.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes.
The most common type of retaliation reported is being abruptly terminated. Checks out.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are several other activities that are considered retaliatory, such as extreme increase in workloads, having hours cut dramatically, making task completion impossible, or otherwise bullying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because of this, a number of laws exist to protect whistleblowers. Some third-party groups even offer protection to whistleblowers, but that protection can only go so far, especially if the government revokes your passport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, two other classifications of whistleblowing are private and public. So the classifications relate to the type of organization the whistleblower works in, private sector, public sector. Mm-hmm. So we were talking with like Enron and stuff about some private sector jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So Snowden would be some public sector government shit. So depending on many factors, both can have varying results. About 20% of whistleblowers are successful in stopping the illegal behaviors, which honestly seems pretty low. So this is usually through the legal system with the help of a whistleblower attorney. In order for the whistleblower's claims to be credible and successful, the whistleblower must have compelling evidence to support their claims. Hence Snowden with all these fucking documents
mm-hmm.
that the government or regulating body can use to investigate to quote unquote prove such claims hold corrupt companies and government agencies or whoever accountable. So a whistleblower case would never continue on legally or ever be reported via the news without substantial and compelling evidence. Mm. Unless somebody goes straight to the fucking news.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Which is what Snowden did.
Yeah.
Because people didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
So deeper questions and theories of whistleblowing and why people choose to do it can be, you know, studied through an ethical approach, right? Whistleblowing is a topic of a lot of myths and a lot of inaccurate definitions. Leading arguments in the ideological camp maintain that whistleblowing is the most basic of ethical traits and simply telling the truth in order to stop illegal, harmful activities or fraud against the government and taxpayers.
Mm.
In the opposite camp, many corporations or, you know, the government, different corporate government leaders
mm-hmm.
see whistleblowing as being disloyal for breaching confidentiality,
mm-hmm.
especially in industries that handle sensitive client or patient information.
And it's so hard because it just leaves it up to the individual to use their own like best moral judgment, because mm-hmm. often to call anyone out in these situations is to go against company policy or to break the law, like by exposing things that you've signed papers to say you will never expose. And so just by doing the right thing, you're doing something that's like legally punishable. And so I don't know, that makes it feel like pretty impossible to me.
Totally. And listen, there are legal counteractive measures that exist to protect whistleblowers, right? But that protection is also subject to a lot of stipulations.
It's limited.
Everything's limited. Come on. Hundreds of laws grant protection to whistleblowers, but stipulations can easily cloud that protection and leave whistleblowers vulnerable to retaliation, sometimes even threats and physical harm.
Mm-hmm.
However, the decision and action has become far more complicated with recent advancements in technology and communication. I think the Snowden example is a really good example of how there's a lot of technology that people don't understand, and that makes a lot of things a lot more complicated here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like, people probably believe in some amount of government surveillance, maybe, of like certain things, right? You might assume that like the government surveils or oversees some things, you know, like a really rudimentary example of that would be like trying to prevent tax fraud. You might be mm-hmm. like surveilling mm-hmm. what some company is doing. But things get a little bit more complicated there because of the technology people have and like average Joe's lack of understanding of what people could be doing with that. So
exactly, average Joe's lack of understanding, because when I remember during the W. Bush presidency, when after 9/11 there was like a bunch of national security stuff happening and like Homeland Security Act or whatever, Patriot Act, that was what it was, where they were basically just allowed to listen into phone conversations of anyone in America at any time. And I remember like a lot of people were uncomfortable with that. And I asked my parents about it. I was like, isn't that like a little freaky? Like, I don't like thinking about it. I'm just like talking to Austin or like talking to a friend and like someone, like some old man is just like listening. And their response was, well, it doesn't matter. Like, you have nothing to hide. So like, you basically like, you have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide, was their response. And so like, it's a good thing to like have surveillance and like, yeah. And that I like, as an adult, that's like very strange to me, but it's like a hard thing to argue with.
That feels very dystopian. Yes, like you have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide. Is that like a line in some movie?
It is something.
To fear if you have nothing to hide.
Or just like maybe like in World War II, people are like saying that a lot. I don't know. I think we've seen it in a lot of dystopian films.
I feel like the takeaway about that shit in my household was we were
Harry Potter.
We were like, no one is. It might be. It might be. I'm not sure. But we were like, yeah, no one's listening to us. We're not that important. Like, don't get it twisted.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of it.
No, 100%. I think there's a lot of complicated things.
But average Joe's not understanding is, like, why I was saying that. That was your point. And I feel like my family just really didn't. There's some average Joes that really don't understand about that.
Real. Totally real. So a little bit about the syntax of this, because we mentioned some kind of, like, tattletale stuff earlier. I do just want to tell you a little bit about the origin of this term. So this was funny to me. I was like surprised to see this name involved in the origin of this term. But U.S. civic activist Ralph Nader.
Oh, my God. I don't. He's the person who like won't go away, but I don't know anything about him, really.
Okay. Ralph Nader is said to have coined the phrase, but he in fact put a positive spin on the term in the early 1970s to avoid the negative connotations found in other words such as informer and snitch. However, origins of the word, they date back to the 19th century. Ralph Nader didn't make up the term whistleblower, but I think his use of it in the 70s was to make people sound like less of a tattletale.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah. The word is linked to the use of a whistle to alert the public or a crowd about a bad situation, such
like
as
like a referee.
Right. Commission of a crime, breaking the rules during a game, to your ref point. The phrase whistleblower attached itself to law enforcement officials in the 19th century because they used a whistle to alert the public or fellow police. Sports referees who use a whistle to indicate an illegal or foul play are also called whistleblowers. Okay. And in an 1883 story in the Jansville Gazette, called a policeman who used his whistle to alert citizens about a riot a whistleblower without the hyphen. Okay. By the year 1963, the phrase had become a hyphenated word, whistleblower, and the word began to be used by journalists in the 1960s for people who revealed wrongdoing, such as Nader. It eventually evolved into the compound word whistleblower. I just like a little bit of linguistic history.
I know.
Why not?
You do. Yes.
I love it. It's my fake platform.
Amateur linguist.
You know what? I am an amateur linguist thanks to YouTube. Speaking of YouTube and the potential pitfalls, should we say, of YouTube. The reason I actually got on to thinking about whistleblowers was because I was listening to an interview this week with Tristan Harris. So who is Tristan Harris? Let me tell you.
Yes.
So he is an American computer scientist and business person. He is the president and co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology. And earlier he worked as a design ethicist at Google. He received his degree from Stanford, where he studied the ethics of human persuasion.
Interesting. That is interesting.
Right? So, he, in 2007, dropped out of his master's program at Stanford. He launched a startup which was focused on bringing, you know, instantaneous search to content on the web. Google bought his company in 11, and then he ended up working on Google Inbox.
So he's crushing and, it. Cool, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a tech dude who's, like, doing the shit. But when he was at Google, he authored a call to minimize distraction and respect users' attention. So he shared this presentation with a handful of Google co-workers in February 2013. Mm-hmm. And in his presentation, he suggested that Google, Apple, and Facebook should feel an enormous responsibility to make sure that humanity doesn't spend its days buried in a smartphone.
And they should, but they don't.
Well, the 141 slide deck, and I was like, Jesus, Tristan, 141
slides. He's doing it. You know, it's all right. They got the whole day.
Well, it was eventually viewed by tens of thousands of Google employees, and it sparked a lot of conversation about the company's responsibilities even long after he left Google, okay? Mm. He left in December of 2015 to focus on a nonprofit called Time Well Spent, which he co-founded. Cool. And through Time Well Spent, Harris hoped to mobilize support for an alternative build around core values at tech corporations, chief of which is helping us spend our time well instead of demanding more of it. So Harris asserts that all human minds can be hijacked and the choices they make are not as free as they think they are. This goes back to our average Joe, like, do you understand these kinds of things, right?
I'm really here for this ideology. Go on.
Sure. The Atlantic stated in their November 2016 issue that Harris is the closest thing Silicon Valley has to a conscience.
Wow. Yeah, that's probably true.
So he's at Google. He gets a lot of time to kind of dig into this stuff. You know, he first writes about this there in the year 2013. He leaves late 2015 to kind of start his own thing. Mm-hmm. And he had a bunch of time to do this research while, like, at Google. Like, they were creating this time and space for him to kind of look into some of the ethics of what they were doing. He leaves the company and does his own thing because while I heard him in this interview I listened to express some gratitude for the ability to spend time doing some of this research, Google still wasn't, like, changing the way they were doing anything.
Right, like, maybe they hired him for something that, like, they weren't even, like, really ready to move into.
Right. So he kind of pops off, and this becomes more of a big deal when he is on one of my favorite shows to have a segment on, 60 Minutes, God bless.
Of course.
Of course. So he is on an episode with Anderson Cooper with the segment called Brain Hacking. And they kind of talk about how people are actually focused on kind of getting these, like, slot machine-esque hits of, like, dopamine and, like, the anxiety that your phone causes you.
Everything is, like, gamified and, like, is, like, measurable dopamine hits. It's bizarre.
And, you know, he digs into that and kind of explains some stuff. And Anderson Cooper talks to some other people who, you know, were trying to create apps that were designed to make us a little bit more conscious of, you know, how we're spending our times on our phone. And Apple is like, we're not putting anything that's trying to limit people's time on their phones in the App Store.
Of course not. And they want us to fill the cloud, fill our time, buy more. Soon we'll be buying time from Apple soon.
Well, soon. But I think a lot of this conversation about how people were trying to be mindful about how we're getting sucked in, you know, kind of on our phones, is what ultimately resulted in Apple having in their phones, like, how much time you're spending on your phone each day. And it kind of is an interesting thought process here, not to dive too much into the technology of this, but you know, it's a little bit of reverse engineering of like, hey, we've created, you know, this weird problem and like, now you deal with it, user. like you find the restrictions. It's like they opened, you know, a nuclear plant in your mm-hmm. neighborhood and they're like, oh, you got a problem with this? Well, like, make your own hazmat suit. You know what? It's like, what?
Or it's like cigarettes becoming a thing and people marketing them and then being like, oh, yeah, quit as you can. You know, you'll figure that out.
sure. Quit as you can. But we also hear about him. He gives a TED Talk, and this 60 Minutes episode airs in 2017. It gets a lot of hype, but where perhaps many of you, and maybe even you, Jamie Ryan,
oh my,
know about Tristan Harris from, if you've watched it, is from the Netflix the documentary was at Sundance first, and then on Netflix, The Social Dilemma.
Oh, yeah.
If he's interviewed on The Social Dilemma, and if you like look up the credits of people, I think he's listed first. He's probably one of the people they talk to the mm-hmm. most mm-hmm. on the documentary. And so it's interesting to me because you would think, if you think about Tristan, he's probably someone from a tech world, and I probably think this less about people like Snowden because he was raising the alarm in a public sector job of being like, this is shady shit mm-hmm. about how surveillance was working. But it didn't, you know, public sector stuff, it doesn't feel to me like he's leaving a bunch of money on the table. Tristan, to me, I'm like, okay, you're this really smart tech dude. You realize, you're like, wow, this is like, we can really game this shit. Mm-hmm. And then you go, okay, I think this is fucked up. Like, I think this is not the right thing for humans.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, call attention to that within your company. In a similar way with Snowden, he feels like, you know, his company didn't do that much and he ultimately leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this mentality of, he's a really smart guy. He probably could have made a lot of money. He like really understands this stuff. And instead said like, I don't know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's not like a whistleblower in maybe some of the conventional senses of yelling like, these people are doing something illegal. Because
yeah,
at least right now,
there's, you know, no legislation about it. The next
video it's irresponsible. Some of the stuff that's happening on these platforms, it's not yet illegal, right?
Yeah.
But I think that they're listening to him. I couldn't help but be like, man, there's like a lot of like whistleblower shit about this, but it's on like a bigger, more I don't know if I want to say like global or just more like overarching scale.
We could say macro, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's totally the word for it. It is more macro. So how do you feel about, I don't know, perhaps the nuances between kind of a macro whistleblow mm-hmm. about something that this is like, we're talking about ethics more than we're talking about yeah. things being illegal or not versus somebody being like, hey, my company is like fixing the books.
Mm-hmm. But I think that ethics kind of is at the root of whistleblowing. I think that it can play out in a legal sense, like if someone is actually breaking the law. But like in the like Google, Apple, like Facebook world, all of that stuff is like weirdly legal. And so I think what it makes me think of when we have like this macro like whistleblower adjacent person is, it reminds me of global warming. Like that's the things that we're doing like to the earth that are terrible are not illegal. And we're changing legislation all the time to like either fight that or like be able to like drill into the tundra. Like, you know what I mean? It like sometimes it's legal, sometimes it's not. It's not about that. It's about whether or not this is the right thing to do, like for the whole world in a super macro way. And so like,
mm-hmm.
I think that global warming is like even a little more zoomed out because it's bigger than humanity. But app stuff and like people becoming like integrated fully with devices, is, I think, an ethical problem for humanity, and there's not legislation around it yet. So I don't know. I think that I would still call it whistleblowing because even in like the Enron situation, the quote like whistleblowers did that not so much because what the people at Enron were doing was illegal, but because the fraud at Enron was going to financially crush so many of just like the hardworking, like mid-level people who worked at Enron. And so there was a feeling of like social responsibility and ethics, like in needing to come forward about that. And so even though like that one is more clear cut and legal, I think what they all share is that like it's just about caring about like doing the right ethical thing.
So here's the kind of a follow-up to that, though. I think like I certainly believe both of these kind of seem like some kind of whistleblowing. Do you think, though, the public views the folks who are kind of calling like illegal stuff, like be it in the public or private sector, do we view, certainly we view the culprits maybe differently of like whose responsibility is this because of things being legal or not, but do we view the people who blow the whistles on like macro like existential problems differently than like legal problems?
I think some of us do. I think I do. I think I think of people who are blowing whistles on exclusively ethical problems without having like anything legal to really lean against. I think that those people are perhaps braver. Because I think that it's more of an uphill battle when you can't say like these documents like show that this was illegal and like therefore like I'm taking this to like whatever, like I'm blowing the whistle on this and it's an easy, not easy, but like there's a paper trail for it. I think when there's no paper trail, that's kind of like a clear way to fight something, I don't respect it more, but I think it's like really admirable. But I think other people, like I think the world as a whole, might view like the Enron whistleblower as more like legitimate or like easy to digest than like Greta, the European child who cares about the environment.
Greta Thunberg. I love it. Greta, the European child. Well, way to nail it. I can't with you.
But you know,
that's an interesting.
Like, I think that like my family who said, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear.
That I mean, that's a little dark.
I think that the people who share that mindset would only respect like whistleblowing in a like a highly legalized kind of a like bureaucratic way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you are assigning maybe like a greater bravery even to people calling out the existential crisis. And I don't think that those people aren't brave, because I think there's like some level of putting yourself I don't know, quote unquote, on the line by saying difficult truths or things that are controversial,
truths, if you will.
Okay, Al Gore. But I will say that I think actually we probably view, at least this is how I see it. I feel like people who are calling, you know, like the Snowdens and the Enron scandal and like these kind of things, I actually feel like those people seem to be viewed more negatively, because when you call out something that there could be legal take action taken on, I feel like people are more willing to villainize you because there's the threat of legal you know, controversy or like persecution or jail time or whatever it is,
or loss of a lot of money for people who would maybe try to crush you with money.
All of the above.
Yeah, probably all of it.
And so I feel like when people call it like how Tristan is calling out these kind of existential threats, I actually feel like it in a lot of ways seems actually less kind of controversial in some ways, because it's not like he gives this TED talk and goes on 60 Minutes and says like, wow, guys, like some of the stuff like tech is doing to like existent capitalism, I don't think is good for us. And people don't go, Mark Zuckerberg imprisoned immediately. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like there's
it's
not
less
an
specific.
Immediate.
It feels less threatening probably because it's less specific. That's like if you're at work and your boss came into a room of you and a bunch of peers and said like, Austin like did a terrible job at this and like here's the paper, is like a lot more difficult than like the boss coming in and saying like, hey guys, like this week like this and this went wrong and like we all need to do better about it.
Right. And like, I mean, don't get it twisted, he names, you know, Facebook and YouTube and Google,
sure, yeah,
And I'm sure people who work for those companies and, like, the higher ups, like, are not loving the things that are being said. And maybe feel a little bit more attacked than, like, I would view them being attacked. But I think it's interesting to kind of view this kind of, I don't know, this kind of existential and, like, macro threat as a whistleblowing moment. And I think you mentioned earlier when talking about whistleblowing and how maybe we've had, like, a shift in these are snitches and tattletales to perhaps, like, a more positive vantage point through, you mentioned Me Too. I think
I did,
you know, BLM, which certainly, you know, has been going on since, like, 2012 2013, but is having a real resurgence in 2020 and, like, getting a lot more of a spotlight nationally and globally, has enabled some people or given people the confidence to call out racism, but also maybe even empower groups to, you know, call out sexism and homophobia and xenophobia and, like, whatever it is. And so in a lot of ways, I think, like, a lot of people are enabled to be, you know, quote unquote, whistleblowers about some more of these social issues. And I don't want to, I mean, I hate to call them just, like, social issues, because that almost sounds hierarchically, like, shittier, or, like, putting it on a lower rung. Like, listen, like, if someone's, like, a serial rapist, like, it's not, I'm actually more concerned about that than tax evasion, personally. But I'm just, honesty.
I mean, yeah, but, definitely. They can coexist, though.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm sure they fucking do. But I don't know. Do you think that these kind of movements and coverage about it will change how we look at whistleblowing in general, or what are your thoughts here?
Yes. And I think that it already has to a degree. I think it is perhaps culturally more acceptable to call things out that aren't ethical in your work environment, more than it used to be. I am not a person who, like, worked in the 90s, so I'm not, you know, 100% sure of this.
Sure.
But it does feel like, in my work environment at least, like, I'm able to, like, bring things to supervisors that I notice that are maybe, like, not super ethical, or are maybe, like, a little homophobic that have happened, and it feels like it's treated like it's the right thing to do, and it's encouraged. And I don't think that that is how it always has been. I think that
don't ask, don't tell. Like, why don't we all just not talk about
it instead? And as like a gay person having experience, like, problems with homophobia in the workplace, not currently, but in previous years, it definitely used to be harder to tell people about it. And there was a shift for me that I noticed in, I guess it had to be like 2017, where I had a situation at a job with a coworker who was just being, like, a little, like, sexually aggressive, but then, like, saying, like, a lot of, like, offensive homophobic things. And I hadn't, like, told anyone about it, but one of my managers, like, saw part of it happen and then, like, saw that I was upset after. And he, like, really persistently, like found out, like, what was going on. And then that person was let go. But I, like, didn't trust that the system would do that. Like, I, at that time, because, like, my previous experience had taught me that, like, if I share with a manager that, like, someone is, like, being inappropriate, that, like, that won't really be dealt with, or, like, they'll be reprimanded, but we will still work together, and they'll know that, like, I told on them. And it'll be, like, treated as, like, I'm being, like, annoying, or I'm being a problem, or, like, I'm difficult to manage.
Well, then it comes back to kind of, like, retaliation on, like, quote unquote whistleblowing.
100%. And so in, like, 2017, I definitely felt a shift. And I think that it's probably just, like, maybe corporate America kind of waking up a little bit and, like, telling their workers, like, actually to be on the lookout for this shit, and that, like, they could get in a lot of trouble for it. I think people are trying to avoid lawsuits pretty hard in corporate America. But
yes, they are. Yep.
But it definitely felt there was like an urgency to like deal with it and like make sure that I was okay in a way that I had never experienced. But then I kind of saw that continue over the next few years of like, I had a trans coworker and everyone was like really like woke about like pronouns, even though like we were working in a super conservative community in the Midwest. And sure. So there was a shift to like encouraging whistleblowing, basically. And like people who would threaten or intimidate whistleblowers would like no longer be like the cool kids in the 80s movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
It feels that.
The Breakfast Club does not hold up. Okay.
It doesn't. So that is kind of the shift that I feel like happened.
Well, so here's a thought too, because I love a little syntax, and Ralph Nader was out here apparently trying to save lives by not calling people tattletales, snitches, and informants. Shout out to you, Ralph Nader. I think one of the things that I think about is like, does it feel right to call Edward Snowden and Tristan Harris and the person who's like working at a restaurant and is like, yo, my coworker is being homophobic, does it feel fair or accurate or representative to call all three of those people whistleblowers?
I see why you would say that it doesn't, but I think to me it does make sense, because I think what they all share and kind of exists in the terminology even is like, it's almost like we're all playing a game. Like, we're at work and like everyone is a player and we're participating under theoretically like the same structure of rules. And like the quote whistleblower is like the person who says like, no, like everybody stop, like this isn't right. And like, we're not going to continue the game because like this isn't right. And in all of those situations, I feel like that is what's happening. It's just like slightly different situation.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I'm not coming to that really with like an answer.
Yeah. But informant doesn't seem like it applies in all situations.
I mean, I don't think informant seems like it applies to any of those people. I don't want you to call Snowden that. I don't want you to call Tristan that. And I don't want you to call whoever's like calling out a shitty coworker. Like, yeah. None of those people are informants. Like, what? But like, it's so funny to be like, this person's an informant. I mean, I was like, do you mean this person's a witness for the truth? Like, what do you mean?
I know. And like, what's the line between informant and witness? Yeah.
Well, an informant, like, that's, I don't know. That's like the person who's like telling like police or like a legal organization outside of the, like, you're like the source of, it's like spy vibes. I don't know.
It implies betrayal somehow.
It does. Yes. Mm-hmm. It really does. But it's complicated to me because I'm like, well, like, whistleblower in some ways seemed like it had some negative connotations, but then we're calling, you know, Ashley Judd and the group of women who came out about Harvey Weinstein, people are calling them whistleblowers, and it feels like really different. And part of me is like, man, are people like being called whistleblowers like being done a disservice
derogatorily,
because like
some
almost folks view whistleblowing as like negative?
My family for sure associates it with quote the witch hunt of the Me Too movement.
I fucking can't.
I know. It's horrible,
but it makes me wonder. I'm like, okay, like, are they being done a disservice because they're being this word that was previously like pretty derogatory kind of vibes, right, being put on them? And it feels like it really fits Snowden in like my archetype of like what is whistleblowing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, is Tristan really a whistleblower? Because like, he had already left the company and like wasn't like, let me tell you, fuck you, Google. He was like, yo, guys, like, I think the way like tech is going seems like not great, and we need to make sure everybody understands that like, when you're not paying for the product, you are the product. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to dissect there, and I don't know if it's the right term, but I think the objective, again, I guess shout out to you, Ralph Nader, to try and put something positive on this, because I do see how individuals in kind of those one-on-one situations in a work environment of like, hey, my boss, you know, is using like derogatory language about women, or this person saying things that are like racist.
Mm-hmm.
It feels important to make sure we have some kind of term that isn't like this person's a snitch or a tattletale. Mm-hmm. Like that feels not great. But then I also go like, man, do we need to like have a name for this kind of thing?
Because no, if we could just all have like, if we all were doing it all the time, if we all were abiding by like a like an leading an ethical life, then sure. Like this kind of shit wouldn't happen. Like Enron wouldn't have made a million empty shell companies and tricked like their investors and their employees. Like that wouldn't have happened. But the fact that like that giant system was rolling and everyone was complacent means that like mm-hmm. somebody has to be the one to make it end, because like, yeah, I wish that we didn't even have to have that word, like that we all would just, when we catch things that are wrong, we would fix them, and then nobody would have to be the one to like turn a system on its head.
Right. And maybe sometimes when people call things out, it's not turning a system on its head. Like it's not always as entrenched as Enron. Thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah, I mean, truly. But I think it does. To me, as I was kind of thinking about this and like, who do we apply this term to? And like, man, I used to think this was kind of negative. And now I'm like, oh, this is a good thing, which honestly, I think people think about a lot of words. Like, I feel like people have much more positive connotations about the word feminist now than they did in 1965.
Even in 2009.
I truly. And so it's, which I'm like, God, like there should, you know, marketing changes or something, I guess.
Something happened. Yeah.
I had something, but it feels frustrating to me to like give a name to someone who's like calling the truth to light. It feels, I don't know. It feels to me not that far off from like, you know, calling things like, and I know this is like truly derogatory, but like the fake news and like alternative fact shit. I'm like, why are we like coming up with like weird different names that can be assigned different words than like, here's someone who was like, yo, this shit's fucked up. Let me tell you what's going on.
Like, it's an archetype. And then it like colors the way that we understand the situation. So we have like your preconceived notion of a whistleblower, or like your archetype is Edward Snowden or something similar to that. So like if you hear, oh, blah, blah, blah is happening and like whistleblower, da, 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 you're going to picture something similar to the Snowden situation, because mm-hmm. that's like your mental archetype. And so for you, like the stuff with Google and like me talking about the environment, like isn't adding up in the same way, because like that's not your archetype for it. But like,
and neither is Ashley Judd. Like, yeah, she's not yeah. Edward Snowden.
But
those
do all fit my archetype. That's funny.
And so I think it's interesting. And I guess, like, using the word feminist and how our, I feel like, kind of societal associations with that word of it being, like, radical mm-hmm. or, like, controversial to it being, like, can more people, and I'm sure, honestly, I'm sure in plenty of communities it's still, you know, in this country, radical and crazy. But I think that there is a lot to maybe appreciate how this word has changed. And I think we probably are looking at whistleblowing in a lot more positive connotations than we did when we rewound to the 60s, when somebody felt like they had to start using this word so that we stopped calling people snitches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the intention was there to, right. It feels like interestingly early. I'm with you. But I think it's kind of one of, it's almost like, I'm like, ooh, this is like a word to watch. Cause I'm like, how is this going to evolve?
No, it is. It is. You're right. You're right.
And I think we've talked about this maybe a little bit on like the bullying episode and maybe some other ones, but that I had listened to some conversations with someone who was talking about how it's celebrated to be like a disruptor, like in their kid's school, whereas like to be the person to be like, hey, like what you're doing is not okay, and like that's really celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, yeah, rewind to, like, to your point, like, the 80s teen movies, but also just to, like, us in, like, the early aughts would be like, that kid's a fucking tattletale.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah.
And so I think it's, like, about what we celebrate. And I actually think maybe applying the term in situations like the Me Too movement or to people who, like Tristan Harris, are calling out, like, greater existential threats that aren't being, like, directly, like, Mark Zuckerberg did blend, like, you know what, right, I mean? That was, yeah, illegal. Also, maybe helps the word feel a little different.
Oh, it does kind of soften it. You're right. You're right. Because it doesn't immediately then call to mind, like, someone who's calling out a specific person for one specific action.
And for better or for worse, I think when we... And not we, everyone, because there are plenty of people who are still blaming victims for all sorts of things. But I think, I mean, true. But I think, you know, when we hear about tax evasion and somebody who was, like, in on, you know, fixing the books and, like, knew about it and then, like, ultimately came out about it, I kind of look at that person like, well, like, maybe a little bit, like, sketchier. I've been like, you were up in this? Like, how long were you up in this?
I wonder about that, too.
In a way that I wouldn't think about a woman who was, like, sexually assaulted. Yes. I wouldn't be like, oh, you were in on this. Like, I wouldn't, I mean, and I want to acknowledge that maybe some people would think like that. But I think generally the pendulum is shifting away from that. Plenty of work to be done. But it does, I don't know, it's interesting because I feel like when you hear about the tax fraud and stuff, I'm like, well, this guy was pretty high up. Like, this accountant knew it was going on longer than he said he mm-hmm. didn't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
how long did you wait?
Right. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting to watch, like, the syntax of this shift. But also, I hope to, I don't know, to your point, there'd be, like, a more celebrated kind of stance on people holding each other accountable, but also, you know, corporations accountable and the government accountable and, you know, specific politicians, but also the systems in which, like, all these specific individuals live and operate within.
Mm-hmm. And that's, like, that's hard work. Like, we all have to be, like, ready to do a lot of work if we're open to
people,
like,
disrupting. We all have to, like, be ready to blow whistles. Shout out to a terrible Flo Rida song that I never want affiliated with this. Okay.
Oh, my God. Thank you for that. But
I hate that song so much.
I just want to acknowledge that, like, the reason I think why there's, like, a be cool attitude for so long of, like, please just, like, don't disrupt the system is because when we do challenge things and when we find things that are unethical and we try to fix them, it is much more work for everyone.
And, oh, it's way harder.
And so I think that people get more, or people are resistant to it, not just because maybe they are greedy or they don't want to stop, like, embezzling or whatever. Beyond that, with systemic issues, like, a lot of times people are just lazy. And, like, if it's not actually affecting them, like, they will not fix it. And so I just wanted to, like, shout out to that. I think that that's a big part of, like, why whistleblowing is seen as, like, annoying is, like, it's the person who, like, won't just be quiet and, like, let everyone kind of do a half-ass job.
Totally. And you made the point and made some references to global warming earlier. And, like, truly, like, you know, watch The Social Dilemma, watch Tristan Harris on 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper. That segment is on YouTube. And so is his TED Talk. But on his TED Talk, one of the things I liked that he said that I was like, ooh, that's powerful, was he was talking about how people, you know, we think about technology and we kind of keep perpetuating into the future of, like, what can we do next? And people are talking about, like, you know, virtual reality and, like, what can we do with AI? And, like, what is this VR going to be like? And, like, what crazy
it's
steps
gonna
we
be
can
porn.
Do? And he goes,
it's going to be a lot of porn.
It's certainly going to be porn. but he's like, we have to look at what we have in front of us right now and sift through the fact that, like, the way the system is working is, you know, not great. It's not helping people use their time in a positive way. You know, he hearkens to how time is our most valuable resource, which, like, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Our attention and our time are the most valuable thing we have. But he goes, you know, it's the difference between, looking to inhabit another planet and trying to fix the one we live on.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like a really powerful way to view technology about, instead of being like, where can we go and what can we do with this next, about like, how do we fix the system that we're within? And to your point, it's a lot more work.
Mm-hmm. Much, much more.
And on the notes of lots of work and hopefully not any more nutting, in true Why Are You Like This fashion, I think we ought to pivot into a verbal game.
Let's do.
Cue the vibraphone.
Cue it. I wanted to say nut it, but then I thought you might be upset with me.
I would have been. So, I'm going to present you with a couple scenarios here. I'd like to take us back to some service hustle because it just feels relevant. I don't care where you're working in this scenario, but I think based on our backgrounds, be it a retail store or a restaurant, one of the two. Okay?
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Just a classic service hustle. You're just like a server or a customer. You know, you're not a manager. You're like,
I'm on the floor,
serving tables or selling jeans, you know.
Got just it.
Chill. Clocking in, clocking out, doing your work. So your boss is doing one of two things. You will have to report them for these actions, right?
Okay.
And which one would you rather have to, quote unquote, whistleblow on?
Oh, God. Okay.
Okay. The first situation. Your boss gets an hour break for lunch every shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they always take an hour and a half. And they clock in at, like, the hour mark, but they, like, don't come back for, like, another 30 minutes. So there's a little bit of time theft there, you could think about it.
Definitely.
And it's, like, maybe kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm. Been in this situation before. Feels real.
Sure. And then the other scenario that you could have to report on your manager for is your manager is stealing $100 every week from the drawer and or safe. They're not doing that all at once. They're like doing it over time or like across their shifts collectively, but they're like walking out with an extra hundo each week.
This has also happened to me.
Yeah, I know.
It's the same person who did both of these.
Oh, God bless. Okay. So which one would you rather have to kind of report in on and be like, call a spade a spade? Which one would you rather have to tell on?
No contest. I would rather tell on the money. Because
why?
I think that there's no way that it could be perceived as me attempting to get him or her fired. If it's the thing about like the long lunch break, I think there's some kind of quality of being like a complaining lower level employee if you bitch about that. Like it feels like that's just like a be cool kind of thing. And like it's like time theft is so much more of a gray area. And I've definitely I definitely had an upper level manager who very much would have cared about time management. And so like either one of these I could have said something about and they would have been reprimanded. But the money thing, I feel like at any job place, I would be more comfortable saying that someone stole money because it's so clear and it's like it's a business. So you're literally there for like the machine of it to make money and someone.
And it's easier to prove.
It's also so much easier to prove.
That's what
and
I,
it's
that was
really
my
clear
selling
to reprimand.
Point.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So we're going to keep that one. Actually, we're going to keep the other one. So your boss. So we've decided the money pretty easy to call, right?
Oh, I like when we bracket these.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep your boss is taking that extra long lunch on the sneak. And then the alternative, the other option you could choose between it, calling out that extra long lunch, or your boss frequently uses the employee bathroom to masturbate to porn on their phone during a shift. They do this when either it's slow or they're on break and it's never caused a customer service issue, but like, what the fuck? Which one would you rather report?
I would endlessly just like quietly talk with other hourly employees about the bathroom activity. But I would.
No, you wouldn't want to tell.
No, I would not. I would not. I once had to tell that someone kept peeing in front of me when I was back by the dumpster.
I'm sorry, what?
It was not my favorite thing to report, and I don't feel that I was believed. And then another person reported the same thing, and eventually it was taken care of. But no, I would rather do the lunch break thing, because again, that's like stealing, quote, stealing something like from the company. Like, he's stealing time, and so that's easier for me to be like, hey, he's like taking over the company. But like masturbating in the bathroom, just like, I don't know, that could get flipped on you. And it's like, are you listening? Like, how do you know? I don't know.
Which one do you think is more wrong?
I think that masturbating in the bathroom is more wrong because
I do too.
You're still stealing time. You're stealing time in both of those. But
oh, that's true.
In the masturbating one, you, if any other employees know about it, especially
yeah, if you're exposing them to something sexual at work.
Yeah, and like consent. You're their superior, like you're driving the boat, and like that's what you're doing, and a handful of people know it, or like people are whispering about it, like that's not okay.
I love how you were like, I'll endlessly talk about it with my colleagues.
I will. Coco Nibs. Ooh. You remember.
I can't. I mean. Mm.
But you would do the same thing.
What a
thing.
Time to be alive.
Your order is like money, lunch break,
I would tell on the masturbating before the lunch break.
Why?
Because I find it way more offensive and wrong.
It is more offensive. I just worry that like, I don't know, sometimes like when you like, quote, like tell on someone for like a sexual
I wouldn't tell on them like the first time it happened, but if it was like an ongoing thing, I wouldn't be like, if the first time it happened, I probably might be a little bit of a gossip depending on my like, social
it
circle.
It depends on the coworker.
Be like, oh my fucking God, like what is happening? But if it became like a repeated thing, if they were like, if it wasn't just like a one-time thing and I wasn't just like, ah, this person's weird. Mm-hmm. If it was like a like an ongoing problem, yeah, I would definitely tell on that before I tell on the long lunch break.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just worry about like telling
Don't masturbate at work.
No, like, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. I just worry about like telling on that like backfiring on me. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't. But like that's like kind of how the world is.
You know, it's not always this easy, but if telling on someone masturbating at work backfired on me, I don't want to be employed there.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Listen, leave the NSA when they do shady shit. Leave your retail job if someone's masturbating on the bathroom. Okay.
Yeah.
And on those notes, I don't know, watch Social Dilemma. Shout mm-hmm. out to Tristan. He has good content out there. And truly, a lot of folks seem to think that in these political times of recent, when that documentary came out, it was an easy thing to watch bipartisanly with family members, if you're looking for any of that content these holiday season
what
times.
A relief.
Then like compared to the debates, it's like it's actually like, because everyone is targeted through crazy internet shit. It's not just the right, it's not just the left. Mm-hmm. The internet is scary for everyone. Technology is shady. Okay.
And you know what we learned a couple weeks ago is the best thing you can do to protect yourself is just Google things that don't make sense with your personality.
An
And you really throw it. You have to consistently
Welcome
Google
to
things.
Welcome to Plathville.
Yeah. Get into that.
This doll is my first porcelain crush. Okay, listen, if you want to let us know about your whistleblowing feelings, about your first porcelain crushes, or what the algorithm thinks you are, okay? Mm-hmm. What? Not who, what?
Yeah.
I'm curious deeply. As always, you can get at us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good day, good morning, good evening, good night. As Jamie said once recently, good yesterday, okay?
I like it. I don't know when you're listening. Bye.
You're not listening after or before, or you're not listening before we recorded. Okay. Whatever.
I'll turn the music up over you there. Bye.
Oh, God.